And now, being a Monday morning, we say good morning to Peter Allam, our legal eagle. Peter, very good morning on this Monday morning.
Yeah, morning, Wayne. Morning to all the listeners out there. Beautiful morning. A little bit of a berg wind out at Tsinsa this morning.
Indeed.
What great weather you had for your agricultural show, and the dispatch reporting on, you should have mentioned there, what a great success it was. It's lovely to hear.
It was indeed. The weather played along just perfectly.
Brilliantly. I know we chatted this last week about commercial leases, and we will finish it off this morning. And I know that I also said we'll maybe allow for who does my body belong to when I die.
Right.
But having a look at what we've still got to chat about, I'm going to leave that chat for next week.
Okay.
So let's carry on with commercial leases and then a summary of the leases at the end today, because there's quite a bit still to mention in that regard.
Okay.
So what we're basically talking about is that your lease should be definitely in writing. There's no doubt about that. And we mentioned all the clauses that come in it, and it just went so quickly last week when we were chatting. So we continue today. We move to the section that talks about access. Now, a good landlord is always going to make sure that he has access to his premises, that he can see what's happening, and that he can inspect it to ensure that if there are any repairs needed or alterations needed, if the building's not been kept in good condition, or if they're trading illegally and things like that, he can move in to see that. Because if you don't have a clause that allows for that, it's not the norm that you can just go in at any time and have a look. And normally that clause on access will say what notice must be given and how often you can go and that type of thing. And that access also leads to the fact that you might have a tenant who's about to want to move on to other premises somewhere else. So you're going to need to advertise your building because your tenant's leaving. So it's very important as well that you're allowed to put a to-let notice or a for-sale notice up, whichever you decide you're going to do. So you can't just come along and start putting to-let notices up on a building because it prejudices the person that's renting from you. Obviously, people see that. They say, oh, what's wrong with this firm? Has it gone upside down, or, you know, are they moving or are they not making it? It's a warning sign when you see a to-let notice or a for-sale notice. So that's also very important that your access and your to-let notices are capable of being placed onto the building and that you give a reason for that.
Right.
You know, you don't want the tenants to take scare when you put a for-sale notice up because you've elected to sell the building. You need to discuss with them and make sure that they're fully aware of that. That's very, very important. Then there's always clause as well. What happens if there is a fire? What happens if the building is destroyed and things like that, damage or destruction of the lease premises? And a written lease will say exactly what happens. You know, sometimes your tenant is forced to stay if you're going to rebuild it with your insurance claim within a reasonable period of time. And it normally stipulates what that is, and it depends on whether it was an act of God that destroyed it or what the actual damage was caused by. And then, you know, with the destruction of a building, there's also insurance that comes into it and what damages can and can't be claimed when something like that happens. And invariably, if there's a dispute, it will tell you how to resolve that dispute. If the tenant says, you know, I can't stay. You know, your building has collapsed. The foundation was bad. The side fell in. And if you're having a fight with your insurance company over it, a written lease will set out clearly what the position is. Another important thing these days, which people don't realize, is that the safety of the building is something that needs to be covered. Who is in charge of ensuring that the fire hydrants and things like that, fire equipment, are kept up to date, that they serviced and that type of thing? A lot of disputes arise over that these days. In fact, on Carte Blanche last night, we saw that poor old age home, nothing had been done with their fire hydrant since 2015, an absolute disgrace. I mean, those are elderly people that will never get out of the building. I actually thought he was going to put it on and show us if there was any water in it or whether it had enough pressure, but he didn't do that. Obviously, it was inside. You know, your fire equipment is of vital importance. You know, it can be used for a number of things and that type of thing. So a proper written lease would deal with your hazards and your fire equipment and your health regulations and things like that. Then, of course, one of the most important aspects of any lease be it commercial, be it a home lease. In fact, any agreement is the breach clause. You need to have a proper breach clause in all agreements that you enter into. In other words, you know, what is the position when somebody fails to pay rent? Mm. What is the position when the building is destroyed to a certain extent and there's a breach from that side? What happens when the landlord refuses to paint the building and he's responsible for that? What happens if the awning has fallen down and it's the landlord's duty to replace it and he hasn't done it? You know, people think they can just withhold money or that they can just have things fixed and claim it by taking it off the rental and things like that. That can't happen unless there's a written notice to that effect. So your breach clause will come into place and say, if X happens, this is what you've got to do to rectify it. You know, and of course, also very important with breach, a lot of things that have crept in lately, and in fact, I've got two of them, one of them coming to see me today, where the guy says, but I vacated the premises at the end of March. What are you claiming April's rental for? And the reason is that he only returned the keys for the premises on Monday the 13th, 13 days later. You know, what did my poor landlord do with the premises with no keys? You know, the landlord didn't have extra keys because he trusted the tenant who'd been there for years, and then they had a fight. And you know, one never knows why the keys were not returned, but the keys were not returned. And 13 days later, he was still in possession of them, so he becomes liable for that next month's rental because my client could not rent the premises out. Anyway, he seems to believe that it's different, and he's going to come and try and explain to me today. But once again, it's one of those old shake-of-a-hand leases, and it was on a month-to-month basis. So, you know, what's he going to say? Well, I moved out, but, you know, 12 days charged me for. No, it can't be 12 days because you can only show the premises once the keys are returned. So he gave notice for the end of March. If he'd returned the keys on the 31st of March, it wouldn't have been a problem. Everything would have been okay. But by keeping the keys, you know, I need to know what he's going to tell me, what his reason was, how he believed my client was going to, you know, re-let the premises. So your breach clause is very important. It will tell you about termination, cancellation, failure to pay rent, committing any breach such as, you know, fixing of the building and that type of thing, and how much notice should be done and when, who becomes responsible for what. So that's very important. Another thing that people don't realize in a written lease, especially a commercial one, is that there will always be a clause talking about interest. Two types of interest. One on your deposit. You know, that's normally an interest-bearing account. And these days, you normally put it into the name of the person concerned, controlled by you. So the interest is automatically earned. There's no confusion over it. But then there's also interest for defaulting. You know, do you get it from the date of default? Only if the lease says so. If the lease says it, you can put that into the summons that you issue. If it doesn't, it's then perhaps from the letter of demand, perhaps from the issue of the summons, from the date of service, all sorts of different times when interest can be charged from. So it would cover interest in a lease as well. So if you've got a lease drawn by somebody proper, it will include that as well. Another clause that comes and creeps into all of this is the indulgence clause. You know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, sometimes you come along and you say to the landlord, look, I can't pay today. I'm expecting a payment on the 10th. Can I please just extend until that date? Now, that doesn't automatically give you an extension every month. It can be a one-off indulgence, a one-off relaxation, as they call it. But it doesn't mean because he gave you time to do it this month that you can do the same thing next month. You know, and there's normally a clause that says there that an indulgence is not a waiver. So it's not something that's ongoing and can be, you know, taken on forever and ever. That is not the position. So it's a very important clause in a lease as well. And then one of the most important clauses, and people so often don't fill this in, and I like to leave it blank so that the people write it in their own handwriting, so that there's no excuse to say, oh, where did you get that address from? You know, that's normally what happens, is that when they're in trouble, then they come back and they say, but where did you get that address from? I never gave you that address. Meantime, it's what they gave you 3-4 years ago when you entered into the lease. So I always like to keep it blank there, that they write their own telephone number in, their own email address, and an address where they will accept service or summons and things like that. most leases use the premises themselves. So be careful when you're entering into a lease, because they will give you a domicilium at the address where you trade from. And then often you find that the person has left that address or stopped trading from that address. All of those are problems that creep in. Mm. So be very, very careful with that, and make sure that your address is correctly recorded. And it must have the address of both the person, the lessor, and the lessee. Both of them are there. And these days, so important is to make sure that you get proper telephone numbers, proper email addresses. You know, one slip up in an email address
and there's
trouble. Yeah, it won't go there. And, you know, a lot of people don't have the patience or wait to see that it hasn't been delivered. You know, they send it and they think it's done. Mm. And then I say to them, okay, give me proof of service if you've got. Oh, I've discovered that it came back. And then you see, the Wayne had a double E in it or something like that by mistake. Right. So addresses are very important. Make sure that you've got that sorted in there. And then common clause as well, variation of terms. You know, you often find, often, in fact, you know, most often these days is that with the trouble that we have in the world at the moment, a lot of people can't afford the rentals that they are, and there are a lot of requests to say, you know, look, Donald Trump, and he's fighting with the other places, or he's war with everybody, no matter who's right or wrong, has caused hassles, and I'm not trading as freely as I used to. My goods have become more expensive. I can't afford the petrol to take my goods to the market anymore, and that type of thing. So if there is a variation of terms, make sure that, you know, it's reduced to writing. Mm. A written lease will say that it's of no force and effect unless reduced to writing normally.
Right, right.
And that writing doesn't have to be through an attorney or through somebody. If the two of you sit down, write out what the problem is, what you have agreed on, and you both sign it, and you've got witnesses to that effect, it's as good as gold. But one thing then, don't write out one note and only one person keeps it and then uses it to his favor, or, you know. Make sure that you have a copy as well. How do I make a copy? Simple. The telephone these days is a wonderful thing. Most telephones have a camera on it. Mm. You can just tickety-click, and there you've got it on your phone. Mm. Send it to somewhere. Don't lose it. Make sure you don't lose your phone. Make sure it doesn't get wiped out. You know, that's very important. Then technicalities that you find in leases. You get a technicality where the lease perhaps refers to Wayne as a she instead of a he. Mm. And then they say, but that's not me. I didn't enter into this. I'm not a girl. You know, I'm a male, or I'm a company. It's a it. Mm. So, you know, most leases will also say that your he's and she's and it's and that, wherever they are applicable, if there is any mistake, it's deemed to be the correct gender,
right,
as the case may be. So it can be a he, a she, or a it. It doesn't specify that it's a she only if you put it in by mistake. And that's something that creeps in sometimes, especially where people use leases over and over and just change names. You find that they don't read their lease in full. And, of course, it's a fault as well on the part of the lessor or the lessee that hasn't read his lease correctly in the beginning. Don't just take for granted, I've got to sign it, so I might as well just sign it. I get that so often. And I say to people, no, I want to send it to you. I want you to tell me that you've read it and that you're happy. So it's very important that you do that. Our leases have what you call a cancellation in dispute. You know, sometimes the landlord has the right to cancel where a dispute has arisen. The lessee has a right as well. It works both ways. So, you know, it also is a clause that covers you to say if there is a dispute, you cannot withhold your rental. You must still pay your rental. You know, sometimes it can be paid into a trust account and held to see what is the end result and that type of thing, and that they are returned at the end. If you found to be correct and you should not have paid an increase, or if you were paying and the landlord should have fixed something and he hasn't, and you've been prejudiced and he's responsible, you know, that type of thing can all come in. So your dispute amount can be covered quite nicely there as well. Another thing that a lot of people don't realize, and it happens daily, is that, you know, somebody walks in and wants to buy your business, and then you want to sell.
Right.
You need the landlord's permission to do that, unfortunately, not to sell your business, but for the lease to be taken over. The landlord can insist that the lease remains in your hands. If I, as the landlord, are not happy with the new buyer that you bring in me, I can insist
keep
that
you responsible. See out the lease.
That's it. I can refuse to give you a new lease in the name of the new owner. So be careful there as well. Make sure that there's a clause that covers that and stipulates what the conditions are. Indemnity clauses, they're very important in there. Can be indemnity against VAT and things like that. You know, VAT is covered in leases as well. Make sure both parties are VAT vendors, or if the landlord's a VAT vendor, you need to make sure, you know, that he's giving you a VAT invoice at least, so that you know that you're paying a rental of, say, 60,000 plus the VAT on it of 15,000. So it must clarify and clear it. And you need that for your tax returns and your financials at the end of the year. You know, your accountant will want all of that. Even if you're not a VAT vendor, it's important that, you know, VAT is covered correctly in the agreement. What is the position? You know, a lot of people don't earn enough to become VAT vendors, so they're protected. But then you might find that the landlord is somebody that's got a number of properties and he pays his monthly VAT. So he needs to be covered as well. So there's that type of thing. You've got your services that is covered in there, your water, lights, your utilities. Who pays it? Do you need to give proof of payment to the landlord? You know, a lot of leases say, okay, your rent is going to be 10 Rand plus VAT, which is payable to the landlord. And then the utilities, the water, the lights, the fire, the refuse, the sewerage, and all that must be paid by the tenant. And monthly, he must furnish the landlord with proof. A very important clause. That's why I always say it's probably easier for the landlord to make sure that it's included in the monthly rental account and that he pays it to ensure that he doesn't fall into arrears. So often, you know, people forget to pay or they don't pay, and you wake up at the end and there's a huge municipal account outstanding, a huge account for rates, a huge account for water, which is separate to BCM, it's Amatola and things like that. So make sure that your local authorities and your utilities are properly covered in the lease, that the people know who's responsible for what and when they must do it. Then, you know, the allocation of monies received as well. A lot of leases will cover that. You know, does it first go towards arrears? Does it first go to utilities? What happens where there's a shortfall in the payment at month end? You need to make sure that that's done. You can't just say, okay, so my rent is 6 Rand, I'm paying you 6 Rand. You know, you might have to utilize that for the utilities or something like that. So the allocation of money received must be clearly set out in the lease agreement as well. Another thing that people often fight over, you know, you move into a premises and you put up a couple of walls, you add in some nice front windows and things like that. In other words, you improve the building for the landlord. So if the lessee does make improvements, does he take them with him when he leaves? No, he can't, because it's a permanent fixture. Who then is responsible for that? Can he claim that back? Can he deduct it from the rental? So before you do anything, make sure that you sit down with your landlord and come to terms. You know, say to him, look, the front of the shop has a terrible, terrible front. We want to change it to a nice aluminium window and new modern door or fold-up doors, as is very common these days. And we want to put a security guard gate up there. You know, they've got these pull-down, like garage door security these days that they put in, which is of importance to the shop owner, to whoever's renting your building. You know, you might want to add a front onto the front of a building to make it look more respectable, because you rented an old building from somebody. So those improvements, you need to make sure that you know who's responsible for them. You know, you can't just take it for granted. You can't just make a change and then say, okay, so at the end of the time, you know, I'm not going to pay you the last month's rental, because when I moved in, I put a front door on for you, which is to your advantage, and now your building looks better.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. Make sure that it's at least to writing and in the lease. Another thing that most commercial leases will have is, you know, you might find a tenant that's extremely happy in your building, and he might want what you call a right of first refusal. In other words, if you're going to put the building up for sale, You know, he wants to have an option to purchase it. So that right of purchase, right of first refusal, normally you put a clause in there to say that if the landlord finds a buyer and the buyer offers him 20 Rand, you make it available to him, and within 7 days he must match that same amount. But make sure that's written as well. A lot of landlords in the past have come along and said, oh, I have an offer from Joe Soap for 20 Rand. And there's no place. You just kind of force things into making a price and getting a correct, you know, amount out of you. The Consumer Protection Act, very important as well. You know, there are a lot of clauses in leases that might be contrary to the provisions contained in the CPR. So make sure as well that you are okay with that and that it's covered in your lease agreement. And then another thing we mentioned already, you know, you also get inventory. What is the position with air conditioners? What is the position with fire hydrants? What is the position with gates and that are fixed onto the premises? Who does that belong to? Do an inventory. Make sure that you know who's responsible for what and who can take what. You know, and then that's, in other words, your improvements must be covered. And then, of course, the clause that fits in there as well is your suretyship. Mm-hmm. Make sure you understand what you're signing. Make sure that you're fully conversant with that. You know, don't be the manager that is given permission just to sign the lease because the main business is in Cape Town, so they give you authority, and when you look again, you've signed a suretyship for a company that you're not a part of.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen so often, and it's oh, tough luck. Unfortunately, you signed, and that's the end of it. So it's there. You know, it brings me back as well to the deposit that you pay, the ins and outs of a commercial property lease deposit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a specified deposit. Make sure that it's clear. It's a predetermined amount. It can be 1 month's rental, 2 months' rental, 3 months' rental. Make sure that you know where the deposit is going. How is it determined? In other words, is it going into an interest-bearing account? Do we earn the interest? Or it's not compulsory for a commercial lease fund to be paid into an interest-bearing account, as is with a home loan. I mean, a home lease now.
Uh-huh.
You know, a home is compulsory now into an interest-bearing account for the benefit of the tenant. So this deposit, though, can be paid into Joe Soap's account, and he can utilize it and then pay you back just the deposit at the end of the time.
Uh-huh.
The return of the deposit comes back with no interest. So make sure that you're clear in that regard as well before you pay. Don't pay and then say, oh, well, you know, what is the position with it? Make sure that you've clarified that up front. It's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the return of the deposit. That's where people fight. That's probably one of the biggest fights that we have. Oh, I'm not ready yet to inspect the building. Or, oh, I haven't inspected the building. Oh, I haven't got a quote for your damages done.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know where the deposit is. I must still try and find the account where it is. You know, and you delay. And invariably, there's a problem with that. So make sure that there's clear notes on the deposit. What is the deposit? What amount is payable? Where is it going to be kept? How is it going to be kept? Is there or isn't there interest on it? How long will it take to return it? 7 days, 14 days, etc. Can the landlord deduct from it the damages and all that type of thing? It needs to be specified. Don't just leave it up and open in the air. You know, it's very, very important. So, you know, the norm is there that it's specified within 7 days, or the damages visit within 14 days and payable 7 days after that, or within 21 days altogether, and that type of thing. So take precaution to make sure. And then another thing that I find so often these days with older leases is that you come 5 years later, and then somebody says, but did you pay a deposit? Make sure you keep your proof of that deposit. Make sure you have it recorded. I think I've got one or two at the moment where they're umming and ahhing. They're not fighting over it, but they're not sure if a deposit was paid or wasn't paid. And then to get bank statements going back 5 years is a hell of a thing to get it out of the bank, and a costly thing. You know, they're not sure what month they paid it, if they paid it. Make sure that you know, keep, if you diligent enough, you will make sure that your lease and all your negotiations and all the assets that you've put in and everything is kept together in one file. That's what I always say to each other. Make sure that it's all there. When I do a lease, if there's a deposit paid, I like to add the proof of deposit to the back of the lease so that it's there, so that you can see it. There's no dispute over it. The original has the deposit, has the first month's payment, everything, has a list of the assets, has a list of everything. You know, that's very, very important. Sometimes you find as well, people lease a building and the old groundsman who's been with the building for years goes with it, but remains, you know, part of the landlord, remains on the landlord's pay bill, but you pay for it and that type of thing. All those type of things can be sorted and done. So there's so much with a lease that you can cover, and that must be in writing to make sure that you're doing it correctly. So very, very important. So when we look at the two now, just summing up basically, because I think we're running out of time, your new rules in respect of home leases is quite simple and there. It must be in writing. There must be a deposit in the interest-bearing account for you. Your notice periods are there, and the tribunal is there to assist anything that takes place. And like I said, we have a great tribunal here in East London, and they're on the ball. The other one, the commercial leases, a lot more complicated. Something that you need to do properly. Make sure that it's in writing. Make sure that all the different aspects thereof are properly covered. Make sure that you leave nothing floating, so that there's doubt, so that there's a gap where people can argue and get into lawsuits, which will take years and years to sort. You know, but it's shocking, but all over the world you can play with litigation. You can extend things. You know, so often people don't have money, so they play for a couple of months and they're quite happy to pay the cost because they've gained time and they've delayed the payment of money that they can use for something else in the meantime. Those are the shocking things that happen, believe it or not. But that's it, basically, Wayne. It's there. Leases are of vital importance. Make sure that you're covered.
Indeed. And as you said, Peter, there's no gray area. Black and white is where the lease should be.
Correct. Black and white shows you everything. And like I say, make sure that you keep it all together. Don't do everything and put it into black and white and then not know where the black and white is to be found.
Yes, yes. Keep records safe and sound.
It's amazing how things disappear. Landlords make, oh, I don't know where I put your lease and that type of thing. Make sure you get a copy. Like I say, in this day and age, everything in writing in black and white, make sure you've got your own copy. So if there is a dispute, which is the only time that there's a problem, you know, some leases go smoothly. People move in, move out, and everything's pay their rental. Everything's up to date. The end of the time, they do an inspection. The building's in great order. You've got a decent tenant who comes and paints or fixes and ensures everything's right. In other instances, you've got people that are out there to see how much they can get out of it, what they can gain, how they can delay payment, how they can avoid payment. Those are unfortunately facts of life that can't be done away with.
That's it. Yeah. Peter, very, very interesting and, like you say, very important as well. Thank you very much for all that information. If somebody is maybe in the process and wants to find out more, maybe they want to check that they've got all their ducks in a row, how do they get in touch with Alums?
Yeah, they can find us at 6 Sansom Road in Berea, little side street where Pep Stores is, number 6. Telephone 043-721-018. Or they can like us on Facebook, just add an S to Alums, and they'll find all our details there. And, of course, always on Wild Coast FM, if they go in there, they'll find our details as well on your website. They'll find it on your WhatsApp as well, and they'll find it on your Facebook. No problem.
Radio, Peter, thank you very much. Have a great week. Looking forward to chatting next week.
Super, Wayne.
Thanks, Peter. Cheerio then. Peter Alum with today's Legal Eagle.